was on your Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Parshas Matis and Masei, double header portion. Moving right along, we concluded the discussion with the war and its aftermath. The eastern areas, northeastern areas adjacent to Israel are not conquered. And in the 32nd chapter of the book of Numbers, the Torah begins to tell us about the residuals of Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad. They had a lot of sheep. A lot of sheep. So many sheep that they began to take notice of the land that they were in. The land that had been conquered by all of the Jewish people together by the help of God. And they said to themselves, you know what? We should stay right here. We should stay right here. We got lots of sheep. There's lots of grazing. It's a pasture. We should stay right here. And so they decide they're going to approach Moshe Rabbeinu. And they're going to make their request. And they come and they say, Moshe, if we may, we'd like to stay right here, outside the land of Israel proper. We'll give our portion away to our brothers. And we'll settle here in what is known as Eiver HaYarden. Moshe Rabbeinu does not react well. In fact, he's shocked. He says to the children of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, how could you say such a thing? We're going to pick up the narrative, chapter 32. We're going to go to verse 5. So Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven come along and they say, we have this idea, the land that has been smitten, Vayemru and Metzon Uchin Beinecha, if it finds favor in your eyes, Yutan Nesaoretz Hazesh Lavadecha. Please give this land to your servants. La'achuza, let it be for us as our ancestral inheritance. Al tavireinu esayarden. Don't take us across the Jordan River. That's fine. We'll stay right here. Now, it's interesting to note that it took them a long time to get this request out. Long time. They said, in verse say, it says, Vayemru, but actually in verse 2 it already says Vayemru. First, we get the matter of fact. And then the Torah tells us they approach Moshe Rabbeinu. And if you look back in verse 2, it says, Vayuvayu bnei Gad uvnei Reuven vayemru al Moshe. The children of God and Reuven came and they said to Moshe. And then there's a Torah, is Vadivan, we describe the cities. Ha'aretz asher hikra, the land which was smitten. And then in verse 5, it says again, Vayemru. And they said, Matzon uchein beinecho. If it finds favor in your eyes, Yutan Asaras Hazes. So the obvious question is, why does it say Vayemru in verse 2? And then it says Vayemru again in verse 5. So one answer, says the Ibn Ezra, is this was a long conversation. They didn't just come and pop the question. They kind of talked. Why did you talk so much? So the Aruch Chaim says they were deeply uncomfortable. They knew this is not your everyday situation. For the last 40 years, they have a singular goal, and that's to get to the land of Israel. And now they're on the threshold of the promised land. And they come to Moshe and say, you know what? I thought about this. We don't know if we want to go to the promised land. Maybe we'll stay right over here. They were like, you know, we think maybe it's a nice land. So we were saying, what are you asking? So they said, well. And finally, in verse 5, they get the question out. So they say, yes, Vayemru, Yutan Esaretz Hazeis. Give us this land. Al Tavireinu. Don't take us across. Moshe Rabbeinu responds. Vayemru Moshe l'bnei Gad u'l'bnei Reuven. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the children of God and Reuven, you have got to be kidding. Ha'achichem yoveu la'mochama va'atem teishvu pei. Your brothers will go to war. And you'll sit right here? Really? Like, is this for real? Rashi says, Ha'acheichem should not be read matter-of-factly. Ha'acheichem yovei. Rather, Lashon Tamiyahu. This has to be read as an expression of astonishment. Moshe Rabbeinu is just amazed. What? You expect your brothers to go to war? And you're going to sit back here? V'lama sinion es lev bnei Yisrael. Why would you turn the heart of the Jewish people, me'avedes haaretz, from crossing the land, asher nasan l'hem Hashem, which God has given them? What is the meaning of sinion? So Rashi says that the meaning of sinion can be understood, tasiru, turn aside. So you're on a path, and then somebody turned you off the path. You lost interest. Samniu, you would restrain libam, their hearts, me'avoyer, from passing across the Jordan River into the land. And how would you do so? Because sheyiyu sevurim, they might think from the fact that you have decided to settle on the other side of the Jordan River, sha'atim yireim la'avar, that you're afraid to cross. Why would you be afraid to cross? Because there's going to be a terrible war. And you heard that the nation and their fortifications are very powerful. So Moshe Rabbeinu, very interestingly, does not say, you don't want to go into the land of Israel? You got to be kidding. Our whole goal for 40 years has been to get to the land of Israel, and now you want to just stop right here. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, how could you ignore your destiny? He doesn't say that. He says, what will everybody else say? What will the neighbors say? What will your brothers say? And then you'll turn their heart away. Instead of being inspired to go, they'll say, you know what? Let's just all stay back. This is very strange. It would seem that Moshe Rabbeinu should criticize what they want, not only what's going to be engendered by it. So put that question in the back burner. And now Moshe Rabbeinu begins to say, I have read this book before. I've seen this movie. I can't believe what's going on. This is exactly what your ancestors did, when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea, Rashi says, Kadesh Barnea. One second. Don't we have a place in the Torah called Kadesh? Now it became Kadesh Barnea. Rashi says, yeah, Kachshma. That's the name. It's actually called Kadesh Barnea. But what about the other place called Kadesh? It says Shnei Kadesh Hayu. There's two places called Kadesh. One is Kadesh Barnea, and that's in the Paran Desert. And one is Kadesh, which is in the Tzin Desert. In Parshas Maaseh, where it says that they encamped in the desert of Tzin. And that's Kadesh, and that's where Miriam passed. That's plain Kadesh. But then Kadesh Barnea is where they were in the Paran Desert when they sent these scouts. Okay, fine. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I already saw this. We sent scouts, Vayalu, they went up at Nachal Eshkol, all the way to the Eshkol Gorge. Vayiru es haaretz, they saw the land, and then? And what did they do then? They saw the land, and Vayaniyu eslev bnei Yisrael. They turned aside the hearts of the Jewish people. Levilti bayal haaretz, that they didn't want to go into the land. Asher nasan asher lehem Hashem. So they did this already. They actually turned away from the land of Israel, but more egregiously, they turned the hearts of others away. The others didn't want to go. That's an issue. how well did that go? Not very well. God's anger flared by Yemahu on that day. And he made an oath, and he said, if these people, or less these people who are going up from Egypt, will see me, ben esem shon of a mile from the year, ages of 20 years onward, the land that I have forsworn and promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they didn't follow me. Now you look in these verses, there's kind of an emphasis on what they did insofar as others are concerned. They turned others away. But there's also an emphasis on their spurning the land of Israel. They didn't follow me. Bilti Kalev ben Yefuna, except for Kalev ben Yefuna, who was called the Knizi, because his stepfather's name was Knaz. V'Yeshua ben Nun, Yeshua the son of Nun, ki milu achare Hashem, for they indeed went after Hashem. And you know what happened as a result? V'yicharaf Hashem b'Yisrael, the anger of God flared against the Jewish people, against the nation of Israel. V'yinoim b'midbar arboim shon, and here they were dragged in circles, got mucked and mired in the Midbar for 40 years. Ad taim kol adara Yisrael b'nei Hashem, until the whole generation that did bad in Hashem's eyes was finished. So, again, it's a generation that did bad. The generation that didn't want to go to the land of Israel. Rashi says, what is the meaning of Vayinim? Let's go first to Haknizi. Kalev ben Yefune is called Knizi Chaygroi Shal Knaz Haya. He was the stepson, the adopted son of Knaz. So what happened? What happened was that his mother married Knaz. Yoldulei imai shal Kalev es Osniel. The mother of Kalev then gave birth to Osniel, and Osniel is actually the son of Knaz. But Osniel's mother, or Kalev's mother, was married to somebody else first. And therefore, since he's not actually the son of Knaz, but he was raised by Knaz, the Torah calls him Kalev ben Yefuna, the son of Yefuna, but he is Haknizi, because he was raised by Knaz. Yefuna passed away at an early age, and he wasn't there to raise his son. So what did God do? Vayiniyeim, vayitaltaleim, he had them go from place to place. Minovino, that comes from being moved about. And now we have a group of people who have taken the place of the troublemakers in the last generation. We have this bad proclivity to go against Hashem. Here you are again. Another bad civilization. A civilization of sinners. Here you go. Lispes, Rashi says, what does Lispes mean? It means Kemaisafu Shon al Shon. So, in other words, you're continuing along the same path. Over there, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want more of that. Lashin Tisef, as it comes from the notion of bringing extra to. So, here you are, Lispes, to add insult to injury. Kisashuvun me'acharov, you're going to now turn, so to speak, away from God. You're going to continue now. He'll keep you in the desert. And this whole nation will end up suffering as a result. Something is very strange about this conversation. It's very strange. Because on one hand, they're doing something which is wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu is not accusing them of doing something wrong. He's telling them you're going to turn the heart of the nation away. On the other hand, he very clearly tells them, you're doing exactly what the Meraglim did. So, it's not only what's going to be engendered by their behavior. Why doesn't he criticize their behavior itself? Why does he keep saying, and you're going to turn the hearts away, and the nation's going to suffer? Why does he say, you're dropping the ball. You're ignoring your mission. You're turning it back against Hashem. It's very clear he doesn't say that, and that needs to be understood. So this will be better appreciated by virtue of we're going to conclude today. By Yigshu, they came to him. By Yomer, they said, Gidreis Tzoyin Nivna L'Mekreinu. We plan to build pens for our sheep. Poi, right here. The Adim L'Tapenu, we're going to build municipalities, cities for our children. As to your question, we remain here and they go to war. We will go as pioneers. Lifnei b'nei Yisrael. We will arm ourselves and we'll be the front lines. Ada sherin hiviun and havi einum el mekaimam until Hashem brings them to their proper place. The yoshav tapenu beore hamifzer b'nei yeshiv ha'aretz. And in the meanwhile, our families, our children will live in fortified cities. And the Torah here emphasizes. They said, we will not return to our homes. Ad hisnachel b'nei Yisrael ishnach lase. Until the Jewish people settle the whole land of Israel, we won't return. Only after everybody has their place, only after the land of Israel is properly settled, only then will we come home to Evrei Yarden. How does Moshe respond? Moshe says, well, if you'll do as you said, and you'll go to war, and you'll make sure that everything is settled, and you'll follow through with your promise. Oh, okay, fine, then you can do it. But they still don't want to go to the land of Israel. What happened to that? They still wanted to stay behind. Why is the Moshe Rabbeinu upset with the fact that here's a group of people who refuse to go to the land of Israel? But the strangest is this. They said to Moshe, Nivne l'mekneinu pei, we will build pens, areas, fortified areas, protected areas for our sheep. Rashi says, Nivne l'mekneinu pei, they're going to build appropriate protection for our sheep. It says Rashi, Chasim hoyu amamoinam, yeser mi b'neihem uvneseihem. They're more worried about their residuals, which were sheep. They care more about the sheep than the children. How do you know that? She'egdimu mikneihem letapam. Because first they spoke about sheep, and only afterwards did they speak about children. They said, first we're going to protect the sheep, then we'll protect the kids. Amar lahem Meisha. Meisha said, leikenasu. He didn't say, don't stay on this side. He didn't say, you have to come to Israel. All right, don't live in Israel. He said, but do me one favor. Don't do it that way. Don't make her ikar, ikar v'hatofel tofel. Make sure that what's primary is primary, what's secondary is secondary. Life is not about sheep, life is about children. Life's not about money, life's about family. Don't make that mistake, he says. V'nu lechem t'chila arim l'tapchem. First, build cities for your children. V'acharei kein, and only after this, gidreis l'tzeinchem. Then you build the pens for your sheep. It's really good we had Moshe Rabbeinu, because otherwise, we would think that sheep are more important than children, right? That's clearly what they thought. They said, first we take care of the sheep, then we worry about the kids. Phew, Moshe was there to save the day. He said, nah, Kindelach, that's not the right attitude. First take care of your children, and afterwards you worry about your sheep. What were they thinking? And if Moshe Rabbeinu would not have corrected them, would they actually have cared more about their sheep than their own families? This is the question. And once we have this question answered, the strange nature of the whole conversation that we just read will become clarified as well. So let's take a look now in the Biurim book. Page Reish Yud. L'cha'ere ha'dvarim t'muhim. These words seem astonishing. Ha'omnum ye'achsu b'nei Gadu b'nei Ruvin l'rechusham chashivas g'doy l'yeser. Did the b'nei Gad and b'nei Ruvin attach or attribute greater importance, ma'asher li'aldeyan? Did they care more about sheep than the children until Moshe Rabbeinu instructed them otherwise? Eich nitan lahalas al adas. How is it possible for anybody to actually think that? Dover shekazeh. I challenge you to go over to 100 people. I don't even think you'll have 99. I think 100 people will tell you, say, what do you care more about? Your sheep or your children? Now, if I say the dog and the children, I'm not sure what answer I'll get. I'll hope that the answer will be, my children. I love my dog, but my children. But even that's not a fair question, because the dog, the people treat like a member of the family, and they provide for him. The sheep, they eat. They kill the sheep. You tell a dog owner, kill your dog, it'll kill you. Forget about it. That they were in the sheep business. This was a business. They had a lot of sheep. What do you do with the sheep? Shear them and use the wool, and eventually kill them and use the meat. So what, they cared more about the animal who they planned to kill than their own children? It just doesn't make any sense. So, fasten your seatbelts, guys. Here's a very deep, mystical, Kabbalistic principle. And once we understand this mystical idea, then these verses and seemingly incongruous conversation will start to make sense. Mevur b'teiras ha-Kabbalah. It's explained in the teachings of Kabbalah. And these teachings are also copiously talked about and elaborated in Chassidus. Shebechol dover ba'olam, that in everything that exists, yesh nitzutzeis shel kedusha. Everything has a spark of holiness. Shebechol dover ba'olam, regardless of what it may be, that it has that spark of holiness. U'matarosa shel avodas Hashem ba'olam hagashmi, the point then of serving Hashem, being trapped in this material reality, and then we try to serve Hashem, is lahales es hanitzutzes. It's to redeem or release the sparks. Legalism. It's all about redemption. Redeem the sparks. And how does one redeem the sparks? How does one set the sparks free? When you use them appropriately. What's called appropriately? When you use something for a positive and a holy purpose, that sets the spark free. That sets the spark free. So there are sparks, or there's divine energy, which is trapped in materiality. Our job is to utilize the material for a holy and sacred purpose, and in doing so, you release the sparks. Return to sender. They go back, so to speak, to the Creator. Incidentally, this notion, this is the foundation of the idea, Tikkun Olam, which is much abused, twisted, and perverted beyond recognition. Tikkun Olam is a Lurianic, Kabbalistic idea. And it says that God created a world in which there was a meltdown. And as a result of that meltdown or proverbial explosion, there are sparks, little shrapnel pieces of divinity, which are embedded in the entire strata of existence. And our job is to utilize the material, the mundane, the camp, the ordinary, to utilize that for a holy and a sacred purpose. And when we do that, we sublimate the material world because we release the sparks. The sparks go back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the world is then fixed. Now, it's not just that there's sparks of holiness everywhere. Furthermore, Loi Zu Bilvad, we don't only believe Shebechol Davar Yesh Nitzutzeis Elokim, that everything has sparks of godliness in it. We believe further, Ela Shebechol Shehadavar Namuch, Kechol Shehadavar Namuch Yeser, the lower something is, Mebechines Erches, from its qualitative perspective, spiritual qualitative vantage point, Nachos Yeser, Besulum HaMadreges HaRuchni, a lower rung on that spiritual ladder, so that which occupies the lowest rungs, so too the spark, the godliness, the energy which is camouflaged and ensconced and trapped within it, it's even higher. So the lower the reality, the higher the spark. From this, we're able to come to the conclusion. That whenever it is that a person is engaged in the purification process, in the refinement process, so just like we take fuel out of the ground, but you can't take that fuel and put it in a car, it will kill your engine. It's full of toxins. And the toxins will literally flood the engine, they'll freeze it, they'll atrophy it, and it'll be the end of your car. So what do you have to do?
Refine it.
You have to refine it. How does the process of refinement go? You have to be able to burn off and get rid of the toxins, the extraneous parts, until you're able to extract pure fuel. So it's a process of extraction. Why is there an issue with Canadian gas? Why does sometimes the Canadian gas industry is booming and sometimes it's not? OPEC seems to make money all the time. The answer is very simple, that in Canada there's an enormous reservoir of gas. The problem is, it's in the Rockies. It's under many, many thousands of feet of stone. And there's a process called fracking. And they have to crack through the stone, the shale, until they can get to the actual gas and take it out. And it's also not great quality. What comes out requires tremendous refinement. So, if you do the calculation of time and treasure and hours, to get a gallon of gas out of the ground in Canada might cost you $70. All right. If you're charging $90 a barrel, so you spend 70, you still have $20 profit, Nishke Ferlich. $20 profit, pump out 1 million gallons a year, it's $20 million. That's money. That's what happens when gas falls. What happens when gas is $71 a barrel? You're gonna make $1 a barrel. It's not worth it. What happens when gas is $69 a barrel? Now you're gonna have to pay the industry a dollar for every gallon you take out. What happens? Calgary shuts down. Calgary can't do it. Now it happens to be that in the Middle East, you basically put a pipe in the ground, and a short while later, you have gas coming out. There's no fracking necessary. It's all crude. It's no shale. It's all soft. And it's also high quality fuel. It requires very little refining. So therefore, it might cost them $7 or $8 to produce a barrel. Imagine how much money. That's why they have golden faucets. And they're driven crazy. They don't know what to do with this money. Charge $5, $7 to get at a barrel, and charge $90 for the barrel. It's obscene amounts of money. And they send millions and millions of barrels like this a year. It's unbelievable. But it's all about the refinement. So there are things which are more difficult to refine, and things which are easier to refine. Now, the thing which doesn't exactly line up is that in Yiddishkeit, in the spiritual realm, the things that are harder to refine are actually more precious. So the deeper you have to dig, the more precious it is. Incidentally, fuel or petroleum is an easy way to give a metaphor, but the truth is that diamonds, precious metals, it's the same thing. You gotta get digging deep into the ground, and then you can extract these precious materials. But they don't come out. They don't have shiny nuggets coming out of the ground. It looks like a handful of soil, black rock. They put it under extreme heat, and you have to work with it, and you're able to extract gold from it. And there's different quality gold. There's gold which is almost worthless, and gold which is extremely valuable. The point that's being made here is that the lower you dig, the deeper you dig, the greater the quality. So let's say you have very low grade gold on top of the ground. If you dig deep, now you're getting the real gold or the real fuel, the real gas. Here's the bottom line. The lower you dig, the higher the profit or payback, the more valuable the Avedas Hashem. Why is that? You are now redeeming the loftiest of sparks, the most beautiful of diamonds, the most effective fuel. That's what you're getting out. And when you do that, guess who else gets elevated? Just like the person who brings out the most beautiful diamonds in the ground, who works really hard and gets the best gold. Guess what happens to you? You get rich. You get rich, you do well. So not only are you making a difference, objectively speaking, you are enriched as well. My dear friends, the Rebbe says this is the reason that Bnei God and Bnei Reuven were so obsessed with the goats, with the sheep. Why would they care about the animals so much? Well, it's the same reason they wanted to be in the land that was outside of Israel. They said this land is lower. The notion of sacred soil is odd enough, but here it's not even Eretz Yisrael, it's Mechutz L'Eretz Yisrael. And they said that we're up for the challenge. We are going to seek out the lowest of sparks, the sparks that are outside of the land that's called holy. And those sparks will be elevated. And those sparks are even loftier than the sparks that are found in the Holy Land. They have a point. Incidentally, the land where Bnei Gadim and Reuven were was destined to become Eretz Yisrael, just not yet. That was going to happen after a messianic perfection was introduced to the world. Because Hashem promised Avraham Avinu a large tract of land, and then it got scaled back to Eretz Canaan proper. So Eved HaYarden represents a loftier achievement. They said, we're up for it. We're ready to do that. And that's the reason that they were focusing on the goats or sheep, not because they love their sheep, but because of their intense focus on spiritual procedure and process. Because of their intense desire to make this world a godly place, they figured the sparks in the sheep, working with the sheep and elevating the sheep and the goats and the animals, this would be a most effective way for us to fulfill our destiny here on earth. Of course, our children, of course. But look at the Avedas Hashem that's waiting for us. Look what kind of change we can make in the world if we could only utilize the animals for a sacred purpose. They said this will be even loftier, even higher. And that was their emphasis. So it sounds very good. What's wrong? Moshe Beta tells them, no. It's a great idea to want to live outside of Israel. I understand you want to find higher sparks. I understand you want to make a bigger impact, a greater splash. He says, but the only way you can do that is first if you conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. You can't go for the distant fruit. You got to first get the low-lying fruit. Once the land of Israel is secured, then we can worry about expanding the line of scrimmage. Then we can worry about expanding the orbit of holiness. And furthermore, not only...
Rabbi, something that's bothering me about all this, it almost sounds like it's a greater mitzvah to live outside of Eretz Israel than within Eretz Israel, because it's more challenging or something. Right, make sense.
It's not a greater mitzvah to live outside of Eretz Israel, but there is an element of greatness that can be achieved specifically outside of Eretz Israel.
That can't be achieved in Eretz
Israel. This is the message that should be given.
This is the Torah truth.
Correct.
It sounds so
In other words, the fact is, and this is a fact, this is a story in the Torah. The fact is that Moshe Rabbeinu does not directly criticize them. He doesn't say you're doing a terrible thing. He says, Taniyun, a slave b'nei Yisrael. You're going to turn the hearts of the Jewish people away from going into Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't become a replacement for Eretz Yisrael. But at the same time, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he hears they're ready to fight for Eretz Yisrael, he says, oh, in that case, fine. Then you can live here as well.
The ultimate destiny of the Jewish people is to settle the land of Israel.
Of course, the ultimate destiny of the Jewish people is to settle the land of Israel. The ultimate destiny is that Eretz Evra Yarden becomes part of Eretz Yisrael. That's also the ultimate destiny. You cannot ignore the fact that Moshe doesn't criticize them. You can't ignore that. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't shut them down. He says, no. It's nothing to talk about. You need to go to the land of Israel. This is not negotiable. I don't care if you're going to be pioneers. I don't care if you're going to fight. You need to be in the land of Israel. Full stop. End of story. The last people who said they didn't want to go died in the desert. You'll die in the desert too. He doesn't do that. We have to ask ourselves the question, why not? And here's what I think you're missing. Here's what you're getting stuck on. It's called nuance and subtlety.
That is subtlety speech.
In other words, it doesn't mean that this is an absolute concept. It doesn't mean that it's better to live in Evra Yarden than it is to live in the land of Israel. It means there is a virtue of living in Evra Yarden. There is something to be achieved in Evra Yarden which cannot be achieved in Eretz Yisrael. Something. It doesn't put it on par with Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that the vast majority, 80% of the Jewish people, didn't live in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that the focus shouldn't be in Eretz Yisrael. It means there is something to be said for the approach of Bnei Gadim Reuven. They had a spiritual eschatology, if you will. They had a perspective. And Moshe Rabbeinu did not dismiss it out of hand. If all the Jewish people said, we'll stay in Evra Yarden, we'll be able to talk about it. But for a portion of the Jewish people to focus on Evra Yarden in this way, and to live in this fashion was not beyond the pale. As long as we remain tethered to Eretz Yisrael.
Well, the Pshuto Shem Mikra certainly isn't a spiritual pursuit. It's a material pursuit. Well, they just saw that it's a much more fertile land.
The Pshuto Shem Mikra has no philosophy attached whatsoever. Pshuto Shem Mikra is the facts on the ground. The facts on the ground.
Exactly.
So, okay, fine. So after we get the facts on the ground, well, nobody's going to dispute that. They were not talking about some spiritual lofty concept. They were talking about a physical reality. As everything in Torah talks about physical reality, it doesn't preclude the notion of something deeper, more meaningful going on.
But I agree with that. It kind of appears superficially to send a wrong message. That for whatever the reason, it's
the truth of Torah does not change because it makes anybody uncomfortable. There are lots of things people are uncomfortable with. The truth of Torah is the truth of Torah. If we're uncomfortable with the truth of Torah, then we have to adjust ourselves to the Torah, not adjust the Torah to fit our needs or our welt and chunk. The reality is that you can leave with this message. We do not live in Eretz Yisrael. That's a deficiency. We lack something. However, every deficiency also brings with it the possibility of a virtue. There is something that will be accomplished here that can't be accomplished in Eretz Yisrael. Let's go do it. Most of the Israeli government will tell you that we need the diaspora Jewry in order to survive. I can't tell you if they'll all say it, but most members of Knesset will say that to you. If most members of Knesset would say that if world Jewry would shut down, that the state of Israel would suffer too. True or false?
It's true.
Of course. So what does that mean? Does that mean that a modern Zionist encourages Jews to live outside of Israel? Not exactly. But at the same time, he appreciates the virtue of the Jewish people live symbiotically. Everybody makes a contribution. There is something to be done in Canada which cannot be done anywhere else. The point is not that it's better to live in Canada. If you ask the point of the question, better Canada or Israel? Oh, definitely Canada. Nobody's saying that. Even Evra Yarden wasn't better than Eretz Yisrael proper. The point that's being made is there is some kind of philosophical argument to be made to support Bnei Gadim Reuven, and Moshe Rabbeinu understood that, and it is, in a sense, it's epitomized in this business of their obsession over sheep versus children. So the sheep versus children question tips us off to a deeper truth that undergirded this entire conversation and the whole narrative. Mm-hmm. To be continued.